Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everyone. It is the Red Men Podcast. I am Paul Machin. Oh, away from me, over on the far side, on the left wing, is it? Mr. Chris Pajak, very much on the left wing. Ross from Southport, very much leaning towards the centre. And that puts me on the right. That's really upset. From my view, it's left. Right, south. Look, doubtless there'll be some politics that creeps into this, so be forewarned. It's not, don't take offence. Just, I mean, or do, whatever. Right, the kickoff question comes from 1892. He says, Chris Pager, never drink beer again. Or have to drink a pint first thing every morning?
Do you really need to ask this question?
Would life just be a bit more bearable if you were forced to drink a pint every morning?
I'm definitely having a pint every morning and I may consider just doing it anyway.
Yeah.
Not for any other reason. I mean, and look, there's loads of things that you wouldn't want a pint first thing in the morning. None of them make sense to me. I'm having a pint first thing, no problem.
Okay. You're all right getting with the bus to work then, yeah?
Honestly, fine. You can have one, can't you?
No.
Oh, well, I won't go to work.
I'll work from home.
There you go.
Just sitting on the bus, just mildly buzzed.
Yeah. I don't drink a lot, so I'm fine.
So you would never drink beer? You would just never drink beer again?
Just drink something else.
It's an interesting point. Right. Just get rid of beer to not have that. I don't know.
A pint of
milk. I'd like to. Can I have like a try to buy kind of situation? Can I try weeks. for a week or a month?
Sleep by 11 o'clock in the morning.
Sounds great. Yeah. Sounds fucking great.
Still not seeing any problems to this.
Easiest kickoff question ever.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks very much. So we've added two because it was very easy. Andy, who's at Flymo 68.
This is very easy as well, to be fair.
If you could pick one politician to be one of the rugby dummies used to train goalies for corners, who would it be? Any nationality is fine. I've got a short list of obviously Boris Johnson.
Yeah.
Of obviously Matt Hancock.
Yeah.
And of obviously Michael Gove.
Yeah.
And
add some to that shortlist.
You could add almost all of the. The only members of the government I wouldn't add are the ones I've never heard of because I just don't know the names to add them.
I picked another one.
Chippy Tits.
No, not Chippy Tits.
Joe Anderson. the Liverpool mayor, Joe Anderson.
I'm going to say you're both going, yeah. Jacob Rees-Mogg.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Big C bomb.
Sorry, yeah, like I thought will they have them in like? Can they have them in like a row, all attached together?
I don't think it's. I don't think it's enough. To be honest, training rugby players better.
Yeah.
Like, why would you want to go? Can we just go near them?
Yeah, go. I mean, I'd be going up with my knees to catch things, just to make sure.
Yeah, or you know, a karate kick, whatever.
Mm. Or testing secondhand skydiving equipment.
There's also a good question is if we then turn them into rugby dummies, if we left them in charge, would they do a better or worse job than the actual real versions currently in charge right now?
They'd be 2 meters apart for a start, wouldn't they?
I think the dummies might do a better job, to be fair.
Gobshites. Liverpool are going into lockdown. We're going to be talking about it throughout the afternoon, I'm certain of it. We're going to be doing the Liverpool leading the conversation on English football reform. We're going to be doing a bit of a deeper dive on the Reds news roundup show this week. We're going to be talking about a few bits and pieces around that. And obviously the Merseyside derby is looming this weekend, so we'll come on to that. Join up a membership. And I want to give a shout out to Tom Robertson. Welcome to Club Captain. He's just joined. You get access to one bonus show every week. What are you doing?
He's just spilled his tea all over his crotch.
Oh, that is incredible. Is it hot?
Yeah.
No. We're crotches.
Yeah.
Be very careful, Chris.
There's a lot of like there's a lot of like really overwrought testosterone flying between you two boys this morning.
Has there been?
Has there been a spell?
Is that the only thing that's been flying over us this morning? Ross's tea being the other.
Anyway, yes, welcome to Tom Robinson Joins Us Club. Captain, he gets the final word show for the Merseyside derby. And also rewinding the clock to the last really good game that we played was Arsenal as well. Bonus content for club captain and club legend level tiers and access to the emotes, which you can use in the comments of live shows that we do, just like this one, and the watch along, which again we'll be doing for the derby this weekend. Right. Okay then, Chris, Liverpool leading the conversation on football reforms. We're not going to dive into that today, particularly because we're going to do a really, really deep dive into it tomorrow. But I thought it was interesting to kind of, before we get into that conversation, I thought it was really interesting because I saw Rory Smith put a tweet out and it was... A lot of tweets.
Yes. Questioning things like he hadn't actually formed an opinion. It was really interesting way of going about it.
Sparked some really interesting conversation of just kind of saying, like, what are people's thoughts on this and what do people think of the problems with it? So I thought it was interesting in a similar vein to let's just strip it all back and let's go from the start and let's look at football as it is today and think about the things that we think are desperately in need of reform in the modern game. I've said roughly three each, but let's just do it conversationally. What have you got?
First things first, and maybe you wouldn't necessarily have said this a week ago, but maybe a lot of people would agree with this for a long time, but certainly after the Project Big Picture stuff, for me it's more fan involvement in the direction of football. And I think that's what Project Big Picture has brought to me and made me think about, because it's all well and good people wanting individual ownership over the clubs and stuff like that from fan bases and stuff, but decisions are getting made for thousands and millions of people by, a handful of businessmen. And that's not, for me, the right way to approach things, you know. And I'm not sitting here telling you I've got an answer for how this works, but if I was wanting to start again, then fan-led conversation and fan ownership is probably at the forefront of everything that I think football needs.
I think Henry Winter did a bit on that yesterday as well, actually. He kind of said, you know, you're ultimately going to have the Glazers in charge of, you know, he doesn't like them in charge of Manchester United, and a lot of people, Man United fans, don't. Do you want those people in charge of what is your, you know, governing body, you know, the Premier League, and deciding things that, like Chris says, that you won't get a say in? I'm not sure what the entirety of the rules are in Germany, but I know they've got the 50+1 for the clubs, but I'm sure within that, with having a majority stake within a club, you then get a say in, you know, the dealings in the Bundesliga as well. I think if you lean towards that, you do get a say in what happens. But even now, we're seeing things that are probably out of their hands that we're not getting a say in either. So, like, you know, I think there was an Arsene Wenger thing yesterday, and there was thousands of people inside a building, yet we can't go into a stadium. And when we get asked about it, I could get the R rate and stuff's going up and that, but it's kind of like, oh, you're kind of forgotten about. We did a bit yesterday on the pay-per-view stuff. Fans have forgotten about it in that sense as well. So whichever way you look at it, as Chris says, fans are getting screwed over.
There's got to be some, you're right, the better fan representation within football clubs, because particularly, let's use Liverpool as a good example of it, and it's the one most central to us, of course, and the podcast and all that kind of stuff. Liverpool markets itself really well around fans and fan culture and what have you, and they did that for a while without it really, and they were kind of trading on the history for ages, and now the fan culture has been reignited in a massive way in the last few years, and Liverpool have embraced that really, really well. It was actually quite telling. Obviously, we've just done a three-part special with Peter Moore, the first part up on the website now, but obviously he really helped to kick that on in the last few years as well. But and I don't think that Liverpool as a football club, it's like in business sense, you're never going to give something up. And the problem, of course, when it comes to fan ownership, it would be a mess. It would have to be, there would be lots more thought that needs to go into the organisation and structure of it. Because I said this all along, it's like, fan ownership's great, but who wants to be the leading voice in that? I bet there's tons of people who'd love, and that's why when you had like Help Save LFC and Spirit of Shankly being formed under Hicks and Gillette, there was two or three different groups who all had an idea of, we'll take back the club and we'll do this and that. But I wonder whether there's definitely something in football, and that would be, if you're looking to smooth things over and changing major governance, if you could give, because at the moment those plans are giving something to the EFL, which is why Rick Parry's on board with it.
Yeah, and his future job.
Yeah,
the chair of the Premier League.
Yeah, yeah. but there's incentives to there for various things. But who's all who are the major kickoffs coming from? Yeah, they're coming from various certain clubs and what have you. But largely it's coming from fans. And it's like if you're gonna stage a coup, then the best thing you could probably do is box off the noisiest opponents to your plan by giving them something or other. But I do think it's an interesting one. Go on, Ross. Give us a change.
It's slightly different, but I think something we'd all change at the minute is the way that the standard of refereeing and the communication between the referees and the players. If you change anything in football, for me, it's that. You know, we've seen trials where referees have been kind of mic'd up, but for me, there's just a whole disparity between fans and refs, players and refs. You look at other sports, and you know, rugby, they talk to each other, they answer back. It's, you know, it's a stern telling off, and you don't do it.
Public school boys, mate. That's what happens to public school boys playing a sport.
Yeah, but there's also a level of respect that's been brought up throughout the game from when they were 13 years old or
younger.
Playing
in public schools.
You're absolutely right, but that level of respect exists in rugby. It doesn't exist. So it's more than just getting good refs. It's changing the culture over a period of time.
Yeah, and encouraging people to be referees. I look at the standard referee now. Well, exactly. If you're 13, 14, why would you want to go? Why would you want to be a Premier League referee? Right, you get 150 grand a year, whatever it is, but you get called a twat every 2 minutes by Jordan Henderson for like giving away the wrong free kick. Do you know what I mean? That's not a job you should go in. Any job, it shouldn't be like that. So why should they do it? But there's so much, you know, there's so much protection between them. Or you know, there are examples where I think Ancelotti was trying to talk to the referee after a game, and he's just like, no, go away, and you're like, just talk to him. Do you know what I mean? He wasn't being aggressive. There are situations where that does happen, where a manager or a player is pissed off, but it's just disregarding. I think it's just completely wrong.
One of the things you've always kind of mentioned, actually, I think it's you, Paul, is that like they don't have any accountability for the decisions because they never speak in public about it, and they need to address that as well, don't they? They need to be able to speak properly on it.
There's a fundamental problem with the culture, and it comes from this country as much as anything else. And referees are just people of authority. It's people who tell you you can't do things, and the problem is again it's like a negative spiral because you don't know where to stop it. How do you draw a line under something? Because it's like saying think about how we think about police, think about how we think about teachers, think about how we think about referees, and they're all different things, but they're all people in positions of authority and stuff, and we're all taught to like fucking hate them and think they're all bell ends in a variety of ways. And what happens is that we treat them that way. And so inevitably you have to be a bell end to want to take those certain positions and be that, because if you want to thrive in those worlds, you actually have to become a bell end to be able to be thick-skinned and develop it. So you end up with a bunch of referees who do become self-important and do become a bit like, you know, kind of above their role and above their station and that, because you're attracting narcissists to roles because you need to have that to be able to survive in them. Whereas you go to Spain, you know, like teachers, an example, teachers are absolutely revered. You know, like my brother-in-law went to teach there for a training thing for like a month, and he was like, the kids all love you. That teacher is like a respected role in the community, whereas in this world it's not, because it's just people who tell you what you can't do, and that's why it goes all the way up.
Listen, this isn't by any way thought through, right? But not in the NFL, nearly said it because I always say it.
Yeah.
In Formula One, they have driver stewards for each race, and one of the driver stewards is always an ex-driver of some description, not necessarily a Formula One driver, but years and years of being a professional driver. He gives the driver's opinion. So when they're looking at things that go wrong, maybe two people have come together, he can sit there on a board of four people and go, actually, that's just a natural coming together. Now, why don't we have ex-players as referees? Like, imagine, all right, example. Imagine Steven Gerrard reffing a game and some fucking little young upstart, 20 years old, goes, nah, and thinks, fuck off, mate, I've done this for fucking 20 years. I know exactly what this is, and that's a fucking technical foul. It's not a job that a player would probably want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But from the experience that they've had, and I'm not saying that it necessarily being a player makes you a good referee, but it gives you perspective on things that you could become a very good referee.
They have this on the Sky Sports News thing where we have like, you know, Stephen Warrock and that ball bag who used to be a referee, and they're arguing exactly that, but it's too late by then. So they have this ref watch thing, and that's part of the reason why I don't think they do it, because he's making more content for the likes of Sky Sports News. They can do a whole show on a weekend's referee's decisions.
Because football, the thing is, footballers now, footballers don't want to be anywhere near that. And again, culturally, it'd be embarrassing for a footballer to be a referee because they're the people that you've just given shit to and you've looked down your nose at for the whole time. The money's not in it. Again, there's no respect. Again, it goes back to it. We're living a money-driven culture. If you do pay referees, like Michael Oliver should be on as much money as the best football player in the Premier League because he's the best referee in the Premier League. And you can't have the best level games in the Premier League without the best referee. There's a reason he's got the Merseyside derby. There's a reason he gets all of our big games and all of the big games because he's the most trustworthy. But you need to, and again, it's people need to earn the right to have all this, but there has to be our entire culture is driven by that. It's driven by who's got the best car. And who's got this and that's where respect, particularly in football. That's where football gets its respect from. Is having you being the you earning the most, you having the best boots, you having the best sponsorship deals, you having the best this and that. It's not fashion. I'm not sure who the fuck's taking the plunge on sponsoring the referees, but
one of the things I think about, like that F1 thing that I just mentioned. Why couldn't you have an ex-footballer sat on the VAR?
Yeah,
through those things, talking through the handball decisions.
Yeah.
I don't have to be a referee, but give a perspective on something.
Not even that, you're right, because I think not necessarily on the pitch is tough, because let's be honest, if you're an ex footballer, you need to be at a physical level anyway, to be able to do this. You've probably got a very short shelf life as a referee after the game, maybe, unless you're looking at, look at decent footballers, you become youth coaches and stuff, might be an answer in that regard. But no reason why there can't be more involvement at a higher up level. I'd not even thought about the VAR. I was thinking more on the PGMOL board or whatever it is, have more ex-footballers involved with the overall running and the governance of it. But again, it's a big thing, isn't it? Because if football decisions and rule decisions are coming from people who've played the game, I think we can all make our peace with it a little bit more. Whereas they all feel like they're coming from a random bunch of school teachers.
One of the things that they actually do in the NFL is they have a centralised referee team in New York. Right, so all the big fucking decisions a couple of years ago were going to New York to be reviewed. So it's the same people making the decisions time and time again, seeing the incidents. Now, what they were hoping for was a more standardised, what's the right word? Look at the rules and the same people are doing it time and time again. So it's more standardised, the outcome. Now, they managed to get, if the big thing was, can we get those decisions quickly enough? You actually can nowadays. Like maybe that's something that football should look towards, a standardised game. Because they were worried that, 10 games going on all at the same time, all these decisions coming. Actually didn't really happen that often. They had a couple of teams there that could do a couple of decisions at once. Why can't you do something like that? Rather than reliant on individual people all interpreting the rules in slightly different ways, a more standardised approach would probably work.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Fuck off John Moss as well. He's the source of the fucking problem.
Well, what does he do?
He's just a shit referee, isn't he?
There's lots of them, isn't there? Well, this is, again, you're right. It's, the problem is everyone's... Again, it's culturally, we're all going to have problems with referees because referees are the people who stand between your happiness and your misery.
The example when we played Spurs, that's what really pissed me off. And he went to the linesman. Would you say it now? Okay, I'll just give a penalty.
Yeah.
And that was before VAR. He's got VAR to help him and he's still fucking
it. My issue, everyone's got an issue with the wrong decision being made. But what's more infuriating is inconsistencies in the decision making. Yeah. Like if everything was just given as a fucking handball and exactly the same challenges in different games were both given as handball, I could make peace with that. That's how they interpret the rules. I understand that. It's when one's given as handball and one's not.
But this is
it just fucks me off.
Well, this is the thing, and that VAR should be sorting that out, but it's not. But again, the point is again,
people in charge.
But there's an accept. There should be an acceptance of, again, culturally of it's humans doing things without the benefit of the camera angles and all that kind of stuff that we're seeing, which again, VAR is meant to be sorting out. So there needs to be consistency in the VAR, but there's always going to be inconsistency in referees because they're real people running around making decisions in the moment, in the heat of the moment. It's one thing to make a decision. It's another thing to make a decision when you've just ran fucking 70, 80 yards, and then you're trying to make the decision whilst also fighting for gasps of fucking breath into your lungs.
Let's not forget here as well, one of the things that we were talking about a lot last season that we're not talking about now is how long these decisions are making. Yeah. And that's because there's no fans in the ground.
Yeah.
So when fans go back into the ground, if fans ever go back in the fucking ground, then these problems are going to come back, I think. It's all right now going, he's gone to the monitor, great. I think that's a really good decision, actually, to let the referee go over to the monitor in the Premier League.
Yeah.
But when you you're in the ground and you don't know what's going on. Yeah. What the fuck?
Yeah, absolutely. Butters PMP in the comments there saying we have the worst refs in the world, proven by how many are picked for major tournaments. And think back to Graham Powell, who booked the same player three times, going back a few years now. And Hex Boom agreeing with Chris, there should be at least a former player working with VAR. I agree. The one for me, moving things on in terms of what we change, it's the fixture congestion. Liverpool evidenced that perfectly last season. I mean, dear God, if you want to be successful, this country doesn't support its top teams. And I realise there's a danger of like elitism with all this, or we'll see it as elitism. But other European nations support their successful teams better. So like, you know, in terms of how they organise fixtures, how things are organised around European success. The problem is, of course, when we get European success, they go, hey, great, let's cream off all the success and the eyes on the league that brings, without actually realising the tolls that it takes on the side that's gone through doing it. Like, and you go back to what Jürgen Klopp is saying, and I know it's been his big bugbear about the Premier League and what have you, is just how much footy gets played. Now, it's tough as a consumer of football. I love it. Part of me would look, if I could watch Liverpool play twice a week every week, I'd watch it 52 weeks of the year, just as, you know, just as a fan, because I'd rather watch that than pick another box set or do whatever. But there's going to have to be an acceptance at some point. I mean, again, look at the state of the League Cup. Like, we talked about this last week, didn't we, Chris, about how there's like that, the tacit agreement between top managers that we're gonna go half strength here because we know you're going to go half strength. That's never going to get better. The only way to, you go one way or the other, and we've said this about the FA Cup's just going to go down the same route as well eventually, is you either double down on the FA Cup and say, right, FA winner of the FA Cup gets a Champions League place. And then everyone goes, ooh, okay. Well, there we go. You've revitalised the competition because now there's a major incentive.
That will
happen
with Project Big Picture, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, again,
too many teams could possibly get in the Champions League.
Yeah, but the point, it's that thing of then, yeah, on the League Cup, there's nothing is ever going to recover the League Cup, ever. And again, at the moment, it's on its way to be. It's going to be more like the EFL Trophy than the FA Cup than the Champions League. The too many games thing badly needs sorting in footy, and nothing I think is going to make that clearer than by the end of the season, when half the fucking squads are running to the ground or suffering mass injuries or whatever.
No, I agree with that, but I'm not in favour of it for a European Super League, you know, or something else. You know,
don't get rid of games to put the same amount of games back on top.
Exactly. That's what you can't do, just because you're going to make a little bit more money off the back of it. And then again, this is into ifs and buts and big picture, which we'll leave and stuff like that. But I fundamentally agree with all of that. You shouldn't be playing these games that are pretty much worthless at this point for a club of Liverpool's stature. That being said, they're not worthless to a lot of clubs, but they're also because of everything else that goes on in the fixture list. The other clubs can't get to the finals of these anyway because they just don't have a big enough squad. So they're not really got a chance to win these competitions very often. It just ends up being the team with the bigger squad end up winning it. For me, you know, I don't know about you, Ross, but you know, one of the things that I want is the cost of going the game needs sorting out. And it's a great start away, fans, but we're forgetting about fucking half the fixtures here. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's always 20's plenty, and I agree with that. But like 50, 60 quid for a fucking ticket, scandalous 18 times a year, mm-hmm. For home games as well. You know, and the cost of away travel and all that type of stuff, and the TV scheduling around these games. And that's why I think you need a fan voice. It's because playing on a Monday night down at fucking Bournemouth, or Bournemouth playing up here on a Monday night, it's just, this is something that badly needs sorting
again,
out.
This is the thing. It's not our place to sort out how these things get sorted. We're just creating a dream list of, if we could fix football, what is what we consider to be wrong with football? Not enough fan voices in association with football, the running of football clubs, the standard of officiating, too many football games ruining the overall quality of the football that we're watching. And that's different, you know, people might say at different levels, and it's a very, the too many fixture things are a very intangible thing to judge, because we've never really seen what truly elite football can look like, because everyone's playing twice a week and we're just used to the standard of it and what have you. And then, yeah, you know, you add in those other bits and pieces.
But also getting youngsters into the ground.
Yeah.
And youngsters, locals, whatever you want to think, more needs to be done for that because they're going to be the lifeblood of supporters for the next 20, 30 years. If you can't get you and your kid into the ground, how are they going to become a fan in the same way that we were able to?
This is, again, you're right in that. And there's the danger with the conversation on this, and I want to make sure we caveat all of this, but it's dead right, is that people growing up within the city region.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
You know, it should be easier for people growing up within the city region of a football ground and their football team to be able to go to those games than people further afield. And that's not because there's any problem with people supporting football clubs from further afield, but it is that thing of it's your local football team. It should be easier to have those local lads, because we all had it. We all grew up with it. I was saying this the other week, being able to go down to a League Cup game in a midweek, like, it was still always tough. You couldn't really do it for league games. But League Cup games, you could go and pay on the door and you could go and get in. And that was great. And that was my earliest experiences of going with my mates as a teenager, of being able to just go and check out a Liverpool game without having to go through a ticket ordering process, without needing a credit card and without needing an account to log in and go through those processes. I wouldn't even know. And I'm fortunate because of having season tickets and what have you. I wouldn't even know where to begin and how to do that. If I was 13 years old, how would I ever be able to possibly get in that? That's something that fundamentally needs sorting. But the thing is, of course, it's a differing problem. It's not a uniform problem across all of football. It's a problem that becomes more prevalent the bigger the club gets.
It's interesting because compare it to the German league again and what they do. Like, how is it that I think it's a cheaper day out to fly to Germany, or it was when you could go to go and watch Bayern Munich, watch two Bayern Munich games, than it was to go and watch the Liverpool game in the Premier League. And it's like, it's literally around the corner. So how can they can have that model at that price? Talk about tickets. If you get a train ticket, like, that's covered within your match ticket as well to go away. So what, you saved yourself 50, 60 quid there. It's just a sad state of affairs, and it feels like it's all these governing bodies are kind of ganging up on the little man.
And yeah, I'd do fucking anything for it to be back. Literally do anything to go to an away game again.
That's because you're used to it. It doesn't mean that it's right or that it's okay.
And again, it's all a closed shop, isn't it? And it's because the Premier League is the richest league, you know, in the world, and that's a measure of success for them. And there's no wonder why these things are happening. You know, why the top clubs are looking to make sure it all gets ring fenced and gets fucking set as much as possible. Because again, we use the Bundesliga as our shining example, but the Bundesliga is crap. Like, it's crap. It's fine. I mean, not to brushstroke generalise.
The football might be, but the fan experience isn't.
No, exactly. No, yeah, 100%. But that is. But which comes first? Like, it's because there isn't the same money and level of interest and all that kind of stuff in the Premier League. In the Bundesliga, so you can be a bit more liberal with your changes and your rulings and all that kind of stuff. The Premier League is just a greedy, greedy organisation designed to eke every single horrible penny out of the users that are associated with it in any way, shape or form. Like, if they'll just look around and go, okay, well, all tickets cost a tenner. they won't be looking at what that means and what that means to the lifeblood of the game. They'll be looking at the 6 month, the 12 month, maybe the 24 month projections and going, well, this is how much money it's going to lose us. And everyone, and it's so, it's, and again, it's all, it's a, whatever the opposite of a virtuous cycle is, it all has a knock-on effect because the biggest wages get paid in the Premier League. The biggest transfer fees get paid.
It doesn't necessarily mean it's the best league in the world because of that. I mean, right now, Bayern Munich are the best side in Europe. Yeah. They're the European champions and they've done it with that model behind them. So, you know, I don't know. It's difficult for me. I used to enjoy the Bundesliga a few years ago, but having watched it in lockdown conditions for the first time in probably a couple of years, I'd tend to agree it's shit. But then all football's fucking shit in lockdown under those conditions. You know what I mean?
Exciting. There's loads of really interesting, exciting teams. But the Bayern Munich model is they are the richest team in their league by a fucking country mile. And again, that's the Bundesliga model is likable in so many ways. But if we copied that model, Man United would be the biggest team. Man United would win the European Cup more often than not, and they'd win the league more often than not. And we might every now and again pop up and have a little bit here. No one else would really be able to break that dominance. But again, the Premier League is all so hinged on everything. It's all this massive, creaky fucking machine where money is propping up so many different elements of it that if you pull the money out of one, something else it's going to take a fucking, again, a clean sweep of the board and a reimagining of it all to stop it being that. Which is probably why some of these things happen. Why there's some good things that have come, some good ideas in the melting pot. But it's fucking mad because there's no way that they're going to agree. A club or ever are going to agree, or a host of clubs are going to agree to losing a chunk of money, are they? Without finding a way to bring it back, it's a fucking nightmare. But there's tons, isn't there? I mean, we can let's do another couple of quick ones. And the obvious one, of course, is support of grassroots football. And for me, it goes back to the same as having young fans in the ground. There's got to be viable alternatives to, if you, you know, there's got to be other types of football. There's got to be other clubs that can be supported. I don't know how you do that. I don't know that it's the Premier League's responsibility to do that. But
it'd be in their best interest too.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, you know.
They like to do things that are in their best interest.
Yeah, having more people being able to play football in better conditions, because again, I go back to now, football conditions have improved immeasurably. It's in the 16 years since I used to play local Sunday League, Saturday League football, where it was for three quarters of the season, the pitches, you would never play a professional standard on the pitches that we played on. You couldn't kick the ball. It was a puddle from a foot behind the goal line to the penalty spot. Then you had a foot of mud, solid mud, and then it was a puddle from there until about the centre circle. Then the centre circle was a mud bog, and then repeat in the other half. It was fucking unplayable. At least now you've got slightly better quality of pitches, but that's the thing about it across the board, is the football. If we want to be the best in the world, in this country at football, then somebody needs to fund the really lower levels, being able to make sure the kids have got good pitches to play on, make sure that there's good quality of officials, good quality of coaches, all the way up. Because again, copying the Spanish, going back to the Spanish model from a decade or so ago, 15 years ago, and similarly with Germany, they went and fixed that. And it's not a quick fix. So it's very hard to sell that to money-driven people.
Well, the problem is that the Premier League clubs have already got their solution to this, and that's academies.
Yeah.
So why would they then support grassroots football?
Yeah.
Because they're supporting academies down to whatever, under sixes, under sevens. They've already determined that this is something that was going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. This shouldn't have been on the football clubs because they've already come up with a solution. What the solution should have been is the government should have been putting this infrastructure in place, because football brings in a lot of money to the government over the course of the 90 odd clubs, and I don't even remember how many there are now. Is there still 92?
I think it's gone back up to 92.
Right, yeah. So, and that's the point, isn't it? You know, they're bringing in money each and every week to the government, and each and every year through corporation tax and everything else. The government should be funding this. They should be funding projects that get kids out and about and learning and getting fitter and all that type of stuff. So that's where the problem is. It's that the government has underfunded this and a whole host of other things for years and years.
Yeah, I think it's not about the standard of, like, you know, looking forward to international football and what we should be doing. It's about inclusivity for me. And, you know, what you've just said there, you know, there's probably thousands, millions of kids sat at home that have got nowhere to go and play football.
Yeah.
They won't play on the pitches that we used to go and play on because there's not enough people to go and do there. They won't go to an academy because they think obviously standard isn't good enough, or the parents can't afford it, they can't go and do this. Like, if we go and play five-a-side, or when we used to, when we could play, like, it was like, what, £7 each a week? Like, that's fine to us.
Yeah.
All working, but like how many people
can't... It wasn't, by the way. I fucking hated paying £7 for
a fucking hour. That's fucking hell. But you can go and play for free on a shit pitch for us.
Yeah.
Loads of people can't afford that.
Yeah. Well, there's a great... I was reading a comic the other day, and it was a great analogy, which I'm going to absolutely butcher, but it was talking about, like, the percentage of people who are, let's say, geniuses. So, like, for example, I think it's like 2.2% of the entire global population are have an IQ level that would rate them as a genius. And what happened, and then the point that was made in the comic was about, like, illegal immigrants who can't document themselves in certain countries, and there might be hundreds of thousands of them. So within, you know, even if it's only one or two isolated cases, they'll never be able to fulfill their potential because they're undocumented, which means they can't get proper jobs, which means they can't do that, which means you're losing out on Einsteins and Pelés and fucking this kind of stuff because of this. And this goes back to the grassroots stuff. Academies are great, but think about the players in the past who come up through the Sunday League. I think about Ian Wright as an example, who came up the hard way, didn't make it to Crystal Palace till he was well in his 20s. You're potentially losing out on a lot of world beaters because clubs have just gone, right, there's our academies, we've scooped all ours in sand, and everyone else is left with, well, what, you know, where else are you going to play? You've got a bunch of shit pitches, and you might just not. You know what I mean? Either the it's cost prohibitive, or the facilities are so shit that someone might not ever, you know, or might just not take to it, or whatever.
There won't even be any fucking teams for them to play in.
Exactly. You know, exactly. Because, yeah, if all the money dries up, where do you go? All these lower level, and particularly the lower tier football clubs who are going to struggle, particularly, you know, particularly in the pandemic. You're going to lose roots. And again, it's immeasurable. We'll never know. Unless it's funded, but you're right, that's the problem. Is it on football clubs to fund it? Because if from a business perspective, Liverpool go, okay, well, we're going to fund every single pitch on Merseyside. We're going to, every single patch of grass that you can play footy on, we're going to build up to world-class standards. And what happens, you know, Everton are just as likely to pick players up from those pitches as Liverpool are, or Manchester United, or whatever. So, you know, a pure cold-hearted businessman wouldn't see the point in doing that. But somebody needs to do it, because again, if we want world class, if we love football that much, we want it to be the best, then it does need fundamentally sorting. Because again, think about who's falling between the gaps. We've had some comments come in while we've been doing this. Good question here from Paul C. Saying, would the League Cup without top 6/top 10 work? And look, it would, but it would be, I think it fills my point, Chris, of it just makes it a slightly better version of the EFL Trophy, because who's asked?
Well, I think a lot of clubs would like to win a trophy, because there's a lot of clubs that exist to just exist at this point in time. So maybe they'd like the opportunity. And, you know, what I would say is there's a potential for clubs to opt in and opt out of competitions. And maybe that's a halfway ground. So I don't know who asked the question or something, but, you know, maybe. And I've always said this for years. I think you should name a squad for that competition. Mm-hmm. And then that way Liverpool would say, I'm going to play this 25 youngsters all the way through to the final, come hell or high water. I think that's better for the development of players than going, we'll play the youngsters. Oh, we got through. We'll play the youngsters. Oh, we got through. It's the semi. See you later. Thanks very much for your time. Youngsters, go back down to Kirby, whatever. Mm-hmm. I think then a lot more teams would opt in. Your Manchester City's, your Liverpool's, but they'd opt in with a squad of players that they've committed to, that they can test themselves against good sides, West Ham's, Everton's, all these other clubs, and teams from the Championship who get to put their first team out, who are clearly trying to take that competition seriously and have an actual chance of winning the competition.
The problem without the top six, and this is why, and again, just to clarify, we're going to be talking about all of the proposals or what have you tomorrow on the RedmenTV.com, on the Red News Roundup, so I don't want to go too heavy into it, but the point is that if you take the top six out of everything,
is that one available to members on YouTube?
No, but no one will give a fuck about that competition anymore. And I say no one because you still got a ton of other football clubs who were in there, who were involved with it all. But it's and the interest and the money is generated by the big clubs. You know, people tune in to watch Liverpool, they tune in to watch Manchester United, City, Arsenal, Chelsea, etc. If you take them out of that competition, sponsorships will fucking... No, sponsors won't want to do it because there won't be as many eyes on the product. The level of interest, you know, television views will fall through the floor on it. Ticket sales across the competition will fall as a result because, again, there's no more... You might, you know, you draw... You might be MK Dons and you draw Liverpool. Well, there you go. There's your sellout guaranteed. We had MK Dons and you draw Norwich instead. These are the league. I'm saying this is not. There's no recoverable way of fixing the League Cup, Ross, unless they give it. They try to add prestige to it. It's just another.
It's
cutting away. Of
it's
it.
Already a shit competition. I think if you take the best six teams out of it, it might lose the shine for it for certain teams. So again, when you go back into stadiums, like you said, Luton at Anfield, well, great, that's a fucking massive payday for them. It's, you know, it's a good day out, it's a day to remember for their players. I would say if you're in the top six or you're in Europe, just fuck it off. Like, you're not in it. Fix the congestion. We were talking about before, you don't have that problem. It's the incentive of either a Champions League we were talking about before or the monetary value in it. If the monetary value isn't in there, which is why most people are in competitions, Champions League, okay, you play the best teams and whatever else, but like the money that you get from that, from a business point of view, is just unreal. That's why people want to be in that competition.
That's why teams preference the Premier League over the Europa League when they're in the Europa League, because okay, you win it and it's great to win it, but you put your second string team out up until like the League Cup, in it, until the semi-finals when you've got you.
And that maybe does change with the Champions League spot as well. Yeah. I think that has made it a little bit better, the Europa League, because of having a Champions League spot at the end of the rainbow, as it were. But go on,
I was going to say, you're like a Burnley or someone like that, and you've gone like, oh, in the FL Cup, like you've got a good chance of winning it. United, Liverpool, City, Arsenal, they're not in it. Okay, like, you know, we can win a trophy, as you said before. I think you like that, but it takes a shine off it. Well, who have you beaten to get there? It's like Manchester City's run. So that's when no one cared about that. Who have you beaten? Okay, you've beaten Burton Albion. No one cares.
Yeah.
You know, I said it's already shit, so.
Yeah, it is. There's plenty of things. And yeah, we're never going to be able to cover them all again. It's telling that that was meant to be like a 15-minute conversation and we could do hours on everything that's wrong with footy. It's good to have a nice bitch in it. Like. Right. We're going to talk about the Merseyside derby then in a moment, but I just want to remind everyone that Ross and I have a brand new book and it is available right now. In fact, let's go there. It's available for sale. There are a very, very, very limited amount of special editions. We come with a sticker pack as well and the sign, and you get a message that we will write in there for you of your choice. There's 20 maybe
less than that.
So if you want them, you can do. The normal edition is available, which is posting worldwide as well, so get involved with it. It's different than most other books. The only book it's similar to is the one we did last year, where it looks a lot of like the mad reactions and overreactions and bitter reactions to people as Liverpool went on to become the champions of everything last year. So you can get involved. It's good.
There's a good chance if you said something fucking stupid, you're in it.
Just a warning. Right, okay, let's get on to the derby then, Chris. And I've not really been given it. I've not really given it too much thought. It's like, oh, the derby's coming. And I haven't really given the derby loads of thought for a long time, to be honest, because it's just it's good fun, generally speaking. The Merseyside derby's not meant to be good fun. It's meant to be absolutely horrendous. And I feel like this is probably going to be the most horrendous derby there's been in a long while, because we're going into tier three, regional lockdown in the city, and 50% of this city has the potential to be absolutely devastatingly heartbroken by the end of the weekend. It's not probably what the Liverpool City region needs right now.
No, probably not. And I think it's just going to be very strange seeing the videos from the pubs of everyone sitting down with a roast dinner watching the fucking derby. You know what I mean? I mean, what the fuck's that about? Like,
yeah. Just stray bits of like ham flying across the room, slapping people in the face. Yeah, great. Flying COVID ham.
It's crazy, isn't it? Just fucking, yeah, we need to go to the pub. Well, you know, yeah, give us a fucking roast dinner. Like, it's going to be fucking bizarre, to be honest with you. And I've not really give it too much thought. Someone was asking me about it this morning, like, how are you feeling about the derby and stuff like that, and I was like, I never really feel nervous for Liverpool games until the day of the game.
Yeah. Lollipop man.
No, it wasn't actually. He just said hello this morning. The queue was moving pretty quick though. Didn't get time to, you know, get within 2 meters of each other to say hello properly. So for me, I'll get nervous on the day of the game, and I'll probably be a lot more nervous this time than any other time we've played Everton in the last 10 years, because they look like a fucking good side at the moment, and which is really weird to say.
It's mad, like, how many random snippy, snappy conversations I've had with Evertonians over the last couple of weeks that I've never had interactions with. The postman turned up to the office the other day and he was like, all of these fellas in the office, all these Evertonians, who's suddenly me best mate, haven't spoken to me in years, and all of a sudden all the conversations come out. And
there's a lot more football fans in the city than you realise.
Yeah, honestly, like, it's mad. I'm seeing lots more Everton masks around the place and what have you. Normally the masks are just stony faces of misery, as it is. You know, they're happy to wear the Everton badge with pride at the minute. But what I'm getting, and why I can't live in the world where they win, is because they're going to be fucking unbearable. We've been unbearable for winning things. They've won fucking nothing. They haven't even won a derby in that long. Like, your brother, I saw your brother for 2 minutes in the week.
And he's got this horrible grin on his face all the time.
Yeah.
What'd you be like that?
Honestly, smuggling bastard.
He dropped in, like, he shoehorned in the most awkward fashion, some form of reference to the league table or something. And like, my father-in-law's done the same to me lately. I don't get it, like, because it doesn't flow with the conversation. They're just so desperate to jam it in somewhere that they've forgotten how to have the natural course of banter. So they're just like throwing jabs, and it's like, I'm talking about one thing, and all of a sudden it's like,
they're not used to it though, Paul.
No. But if they win, dear God, I can't have that. Can't have that world.
They're coming before sex at the moment. That's what their banter is like. You know what I mean? I walked up. It was my brother's daughter's birthday last week. So I went and stood outside and said happy birthday. And before I'd even got like up the fucking path, he's like, it's been like 7 days since you've been here. And I was like, nah, it's been about 2 weeks, mate. And he's like, oh, two. I'm like, 72 great. Oh, fucking, this is pathetic.
Yeah, this is pathetic. Yeah, no. Like, we haven't lost, and we're good. Oh my God. What a trampoline. Like, what do we do?
they're probably struggling because they're not used to it, but they also probably know that it probably won't last. They need to take it.
To be fair.
It's four games in. Like, and we said this as well. Obviously, I made up for them, but, like, you know, obviously Baz and Ped and stuff, like, the amount of times they come in here, it's like, oh, we're getting fucking relegated, and you've got to go out and talk to people about football and the football team being shit. Like, it's good that they're quite happy, but also, like, it's four games in. Do you know what I mean? Calm down.
I'm just glad that it doesn't look like I'm going to come in to Ped and Baz hanging themselves in the other room. Like, that was my worry for them. They were getting to the point where I think they were starting to buy, like, fucking rope and all kinds of stuff before Ancelotti came into just the football club.
No, again, I've said this in many ways. I'm happy for Everton to be back and competitive. I am, and it sounds daft because you feel it. You feel the weight of it around the city, and the anger when half of the population are having their week ruined more often than not.
They were looking forward to work on Mondays.
Yeah, exactly.
And they weren't looking forward to the weekends.
No, but it brings us down by proxy, you know, because you come in, it's like you walk in and you're in the best mood ever. And if you walk into a room and the other person in that room is in a cunt of a mood, then it's no matter how good your mood is, it's going to be undercut by having that. So I don't mind that, but the Merseyside derby, nah.
It refreshes things as well, because I think it got to the point where, you know, what was it, Sam Allardyce said that they won the second half in one of the games or something fucking stupid. Mm. But when we beat them with the kids, it got to a point where, like, we couldn't say anything because what's the point? You don't need to.
Yeah.
We lose that banter ourselves to go, I don't need to say anything because they're already pissed off.
There's no more depths to plumb.
Yeah.
And, like, the only other one now is that Everton are really good, like, is brilliant, and we beat them. That's another stage. That's great. But you're right. There was no funnier ways for us to beat them because we'd beaten them with you know, little dinosaur arms and Divock Origi in the last minute. We beat them with last minute goals, Sadio Mane, you know, and then you beat them with the Divock Origi one, and then you beat them with a B team in December and battered them, and then we put out the children. We sent our children into battle, and local lads, Kurt Jones, turns up and pings a worldie in the top bin. There was nothing more. Like, Pedro Quiroga in the midfield for that game. Like, you know what I mean?
The only thing that can possibly happen that does better than that is Adrian scores a last minute winner with a fucking hoof up the field and it bounces over little arms. That's the only way we can improve on what we've already done.
Exactly. And it still gets stick.
And even then, it's still, this is what I mean, it's like, we need a new chapter of all this, because them being crap and us being dead good, it's not...
Story's got a bit stale.
Yeah, it, I mean, it's still funny and I still enjoy it. I still enjoy beating Everton, the Derby course I do. When we still talk about them, they're our rivals, they're our local rivals, our mates, our family, our Blues. It's the biggest... It's still... Man United is the biggest football game for me because I enjoy those games, because I fucking hate Manchester United and it's normally a yardstick of success. But the Everton stuff matters on a far more on a local level. But it's right. I was trying to explain this to Sarah the other day. Like, we grew up in the 90s when we couldn't win a derby for love nor money, and we were always better than them in the league. We always finished above Everton, but we couldn't win a derby. So when we did win a derby, it was just amazing. And they're going to win a derby at some point. But this is the thing we're at now, is that I'm glad at least it puts a little bit more on it. Because
this might be the one that kind of changes all that, what we've just been talking about, because this is the best that they've been for a very long time. The best manager that they might have ever had.
Yeah, he's better than Kendall.
Yeah. I know they're kind of still in transition. Like, they want to improve the defence, probably another attacker, and obviously a better goalkeeper. But they've got their hopes up for this one. They're top of the league. I think they're the only team that's won four in four even. So they're thinking, oh, we can do this. Calvert-Lewin's turned into prime Ronaldo. He's even bagging for England as well. So this is their best chance to kind of win a derby in God knows how long it's been. Mm-hmm. If we beat that, when's the point where they go, oh, when can they beat us?
Yeah, no, exactly. And look, the thing is, Everton can go on and win it, you know. They can go and take points off our rivals. Great. And I genuinely said this before, and it might sound weird to some, I would rather Everton finish above. I think of all those other non-rivals of ours. I might get tired of this in due course, but I wouldn't mind a little bit of a sea change in the league in this regard. I'm happy for them to finish above United and Arsenal and Spurs, because I'd rather success come to against the City of Liverpool, the region, have a bit more success. Because why would I don't want... Yeah, it's more money for the City. If Everton can get back into Europe and Everton can be, you know, not as successful as us, again, just to clarify, I'm happy for them to be the second best team in England, provided we're the best team in England. And I've said that for my entire life. I've never really experienced it because I was too young to know it from the 80s. But I'd rather them be better, be good. Gives a fuck about Tottenham. Who does it with Tottenham? You know what I mean? Like, all these other upstart clubs. Quite like, there's a little perverse part of me that kind of wants Everton to be okay, but just not from.
You know what
we should
do? Send Shaqiri on just to cough on them and rub his balls on them and unnerve them for the derby.
Nabi. Unsubstantiated reports so far that Nabi's got COVID as well. Great. Right, we've got a couple of comments to wrap us up. Ashley Firth saying, ordered my book yesterday. Well done.
Posted it this morning.
Did you?
Actually, it's one on the desk upstairs. I posted today.
Excellent. Brilliant. Chinmay Joshi says, guys, you're awesome. Lots of love from India. Thanks very much. Lots of love from Liverpool. And Scott Hawks is $25. Scott, you wonderful, wonderful human being. I look forward to Everton's 2021 DVD review of the season before the international break. They're a good side, but I think we're going to react big time. Yeah, I that's my hope in all this, is that... It puts Liverpool into a very, very uncomfortable position if we don't win, and it puts them into a wonderful position. I would if we'd not been hammered by Villa, I'd probably not be as sure about how we would react to this, but it's going to be very interesting.
I think we're going to react big time.
Yeah.
I think we're going to react big time.
Yeah, I agree. I hope so anyway. Right, guys, thank you for watching and for listening to the podcast. Don't forget to join up as a YouTube member as well. And I just want to draw everyone's attention to a couple of things. We've got a three-part Peter Moore In Conversation With special. Episode one is available right now on the redmentv.com. Episode two is coming out this Friday, and the third part will be the week after that. There's a three-part documentary series on last season. There was a two-part documentary series on 5 years of Jurgen Klopp. And because we love you guys, and because we need to make sure that, you know, we do put some of the cool stuff on YouTube as well periodically, episode one of that is available right now for free on YouTube. We're going to throw the trailer up in a second. But guys, thank you. Mm-hmm. It's been very pleasurable. Thank you for watching, and we'll see it all very soon. Ta-ra.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.